VRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry. Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 10 minutes into the third hour already, and the that hour plus with Alan Smoking Joe McKay, who I referenced. Joe was, he could have come in. He was standing listening to us outside the door. So he just greeted us. Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and we'll look at tomorrow's card. We'll get out ahead of it. And Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Just had an unbelievable hour with Alan Foreman, and covered a little of everything, as always with Alan. Maryland, the national scene, and the old long lost dining scene here in Baltimore. Looking forward to seeing you in New York, but we'll talk plenty before then. Let's look ahead to tomorrow's Black-Eyed Susan card, and as has happened in other years, Nick, it almost feels to me like there might be more opportunities Friday than Saturday.
Yeah, some of the stakes look like they're a little bit more competitive and a little bit more interesting tomorrow than Saturday. Some of the fields are a little bit bigger, and the Black-Eyed Susan itself is a vastly superior to the weakness, mainly because you're going to have a favorite that, while formidable, is worth taking on, I think, a little bit with some real alternatives, and some of those undercard races look like they're pretty interesting as well.
You want to start with the stakes? I mean, I did the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. There is an early pick four. There's more than an early. There's an early middle pick four. But why don't we start with the stakes, and we'll walk through there, and I'll cover people off on, unless there's anything early that you noticed.
No, stakes primarily is where I've focused right. So far. I mean, I might take a look at a few things subsequently, but the Black-Eyed Susan's a fun race, and really Adair Manor is clearly the horse to beat based on her Santa Anita Oaks, and, you know, the performance in finishing second to Desert Dawn obviously looks better given the way Desert Dawn came back and ran in the Kentucky Oaks. So it really makes you want to upgrade Adair Manor's chances. Now, she was bolstered, of course, by that strong inside that both she and Messier took advantage of back in early February. So, you know, just how good Adair Manor is remains to be seen. And the advantage that she has here is that a lot of the horses she's facing are going to need to run a lot faster to beat her, including Distinctly Possible, who's likely to be one of the choices. But, I mean, speed figure-wise, if you're looking at buyer speed figure, she has to improve substantially in terms of becoming a contender. So that's going to be a little bit more than I think you want to necessarily gamble on with any great comfort. I do think it's a race that's going to have a pretty strong early pace. There's enough horses to set it up, and I don't have a big opinion against the local hopeful Luna Bell, who's really run a number of races that make her competitive, and she's going to be every bit of that 8 or 10 to 1, I would say, at the least. Speed figure wise, she's a great bit.
I agree. She's 9 to 2 morning line.
Yeah, 9 to 2. That probably makes more sense. I was. You know, I think when push comes to shove, people are going to look at the race. They see the speed figures. They see how these horses stack up and realize that, you know, this is a horse that's actually a very good fit.
Agreed. And if you're looking for any, you know, any wider inclusions, anybody that, you know, even as a kind of a clunk along type.
I mean, Favor is going to get a lot of support. I don't know how much I want a horse that's going to be outside and forced to make up some ground in a race where the pace is going to be somewhat contested. You know, you can envision that she's going to get a really wide trip, and that could be problematic. She's a horse also that's going to get a great deal of support based on the third behind Echo Zulu and how well Echo Zulu ran last time out in the Kentucky Oaks. So a little bit of concern there, but I think she's a horse that probably is worth, you know, worth mentioning at the very least, and probably worth including on some wider spreads and multi-race bets.
Is this the opportunity to get the Brad Cox Philly Interstate Daydream? You know, she was being asked to, you know, a lot in that Ashland, and you know, it's not like she completely faltered. You know, she was overwhelmed by Nest and then caught by Cocktail Moments, but you know, you don't know how that racetrack played for her either. Certainly Classic Empire, her sire, ran a bang-up race here against Cloud Computing. She's 6-1, and I didn't know what to do with her, and I also want you to address Beguine, too, for Danny Pites.
You know, short of having no other opportunity to run her in a graded stake race around one turn, I was very surprised that Brad Cox is trying her around two turns again, because she looks like a filly that probably needs to be backed up in distance based on the way she was, as you said, overwhelmed by Nest. Now, I don't want to use that as the standard for judging her, because Nest is obviously one of the more talented fillies in the entire group. But, yeah, the fact that he wanted to send her long again surprised me. I figured a cutback was in order based on that performance. But, again, I mean, availability of races is part of the concern, and there might not be a lot of opportunities for her to go short right now in the graded stake ranks. And I don't know if you want to move her down in class terribly much just yet. Beguine is a horse that's interesting. You know, Yagiri obviously had no chance in the Kentucky Oaks. I thought Beguine ran well in the fantasy and is a horse that probably has an edge in that she can sit a little bit off the pace and make a move in the latter half of the race. So I'm interested to see how she performs. I think she's capable. I do think speed figure-wise she's a fit as well. And so, you know, basically you have Adair Manor that kind of sits atop the heap, and then a number of horses that are within range with some mild to modest improvement. And then you have a horse like Distinctly Possible who might have the most upside, but she also has the most to prove. So that's what makes it such a fascinating race. And I think that it's probably a good opportunity to bet some Black-Eyed Susan Preakness doubles and, you know, take some of the price that you like and play them into Epicenter and know that if you maybe have a decent opinion in the first half of it, you can make some money.
Yeah, there is one horse that when I dug up the other evening when the Thoroughgraph figures came out, there was one horse that surprised me a little bit, and that was Candy Light, who was, you know, was second behind Luna Bell most recently. And that, you know, if you like Luna Bell, if you're taking Luna Bell seriously, Candy Light at 20-1 deserves a little bit of consideration.
If you're doing some comparative handicapping, you could definitely see that working out, and you know that would make sense.
Let's move backwards then from the Black-Eyed Susan. Let me ask you this, actually, before we do that. When you talk about the, we might as well do this, Nick, the Black-Eyed Susan Preakness double, there isn't nearly as many, it's the only two-day bet. What are your A's for the two-day bet?
I mean, I would probably, it depends on how strongly you feel about Adair Manor. I mean, I'm not going to bet an Adair Manor Epicenter double unless it's paying, you know, $16 or $18. I'll take 8-1 on it, but I'm not going to take 4-1 because you're talking about what's going to be a 2-1 shot and a 3 or 4-5 shot. I'm going to be extremely surprised if Epicenter loses the Preakness. So, I mean, I wouldn't use really anybody else unless there was a long shot that you liked. If you thought the pace could get hot and you want to buy the theory that Creative Minister is a horse that they supplemented because they think he's capable, then maybe you play some doubles into him. And I would use the logicals that we laid out, Adair Manor, Distinctly Possible, Luna Bell, and try and just get one of those in the front end of it. But as far as the way I would approach it, I mean, I would probably cold punch some of the prices that I liked into Epicenter. And if I felt compelled to play Adair Manor into Epicenter, I would need to be getting, like I said, $16 to $18, which seems like a lot. Although, Steve, I'm really not sure exactly what price Epicenter is going to pop. I've been surprised at the number of people that seem to want to take a little bit of a position against him. And so, you know, maybe we'll end up getting a bit better price than originally expected.
We'll talk about the full Preakness outlook with you tomorrow. Let's back up into another mile and 3/16th race. And here's the Pimlico Special, which suddenly the last few years, this couple of years, has had some nice fields. And this is a intriguing group.
Yeah, yielded, of course, the Suburban and Jockey Club Gold Cup winner of 2021 and Max Player. And, you know, you the horse that we kind of always knew had a little bit of ability and it was going to be a question of when he put it together was Vindictive. And the fact that he seems to now really be getting his act together for Todd Fletcher is a really positive sign. And it's going to be interesting to note over the next couple of days. Of course, they run very sparingly at Pimlico prior to Preakness Day. Last two Preaknesses, one was run in the fall. There was an enormous inside speed bias. And so obviously keep
right.
an eye on that. There's plenty of chatter about it on social media and see if it's playing out that way. But we saw it very, very clearly on both Black Eyed Susan Day and Preakness Day last year. And it definitely drastically affected the outcome of the dirt races. And one of the reasons why Max Player was bettable subsequently after the Pimlico Special was because he had had a wide trip. Vindictive is drawn inside. He's a horse probably that wants to be outside, though. So that's the kind of catch 22 there. But I thought he came back with a good allowance win at Aqueduct and is really positioned to move forward with more distance. So is his stablemate Untreated. He figures to get better with the more ground they go. And he was just out finished by Four Warrant last time out. Probably a race that Untreated was supposed to win. And being out finished is obviously not the greatest thing to have occurred, especially to a horse like Four Warrant, who's not exactly a frequent visitor to the winner's circle in you know, upper level stakes races. But I think one of those two for Todd will probably get it done. You know, he really excels in these extended distance races where horses get a lot more ground, being that he gets those pedigrees and trains them in such a fashion.
There's a couple of horses at prices, Nick, that seem like they could get involved here late, and you just mentioned Four Warned, who's 12-1, and it is amazing how Uriah St. Louis just keeps showing up. And this Dexter Haddock, I mean, he's like the Chris Carter of jockeys. So Four Warned is a little interesting. If you go outside, Ruben Silvera on this Mohafeth. This is a horse that could easily come running late and pick up a piece. And I also thought that Anthony Ferrier has got Treasure Trove, who looks like a horse that could hit the try or super.
Yeah, and I'll give you one more. Capo Castello for Fausto Gutierrez, who rallied into a slow pace last time out at Gulfstream and now lures Flavian Pratt. This is a race that should at least have a decent early tempo. And I think that would help his chances substantially. So I think there are some real alternatives. It'd be a fun race to play some of those reverse trifectas and superfectas. Of course, the Dime Super's back in the mix for the second leg of the Triple Crown. And I think you can really have some fun with some of those because there are a few that'll be picking them off late. But yeah, I noticed Capo Castello really didn't have much of a chance facing Fearless going a mile and an eighth at Gulfstream. But I think at a mile and 3/16ths where he can just kind of plug along, that's the right type of trip.
Should also ask, what do you think this says about First Captain that Shug is trying him at this distance?
I think Shug knows that First Captain is not capable of competing in graded stakes races around one turn, and so he's going to hope that he'll stretch him out. But he's never given the appearance of a horse that wants to stretch out, in my opinion. I thought once they tried him last year in the Curlin, it made it pretty clear he wanted to be around one turn. And the thing was, he was very overrated from the start because of his running style. And how well he ran running down the pace setter in his debut. But he's just not a grade one or grade two caliber sprinter. So I don't blame Shug for doing it. He's kind of doing the same thing with Radio Days, who really has done nothing but give the appearance of being a one-run, one-turn horse. And now he's trying to stretch them out. Obviously, Shug's training style lends itself well to distance racing, but I don't see First Captain being a factor here at all.
5-1, too, not exactly palatable.
He's kind of a takeout killer at 5-1.
Having run into Tom Bellhouse and Terry Finley this morning, it's better that you said that than me.
yeah, you know, look, I have plenty of respect for the connections, but, you know, I think this is a, you know what I think it is, Steve? I think it's a realistic placement because I think they know their horse's limitations, but I think they're also making, you know, they're doing this on the come and they're hoping that, that he's going to be good going two turns, and horses like that at 5-1 are bad bets.
Let's push into the turf sprint, and you always get a steady diet of these, stake or no stake, when you come to the Mid-Atlantic. And the very one, fillies and mares, going five, and I've got a horse that I'm almost ready to single, Nick, and that's Princess Kokachin for Jerry Robb. I think she is absolutely imposing her will on this bunch from the front end.
Yeah, I thought between she and Pain Dem Blues Away, you'd probably find the winner.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, 5/8 on the grass is just so set up for pace types, and she looks very quick. So, no, I agree. And the other thing, and, you know, you've said this for a long time, when you can take some of these big field turf sprints and make them simple, especially if there's no Wesley Ward in there to spoil the day at a vastly deflated price, when you can do that, I think it's just a big advantage. So I think the more it, simply you can handle these, the better. Paint Up Blues Away comes off a really good win at Tampa, and but your horse is coming in the right way as well. So I kind of felt like one of those two would find a way to get it done.
If you are looking for a price to consider or include, I thought that the Brittany Russell outside Adelaide Mist was a little interesting and potentially a. You know, somebody, you got to have somebody in your third and fourth slot. Let's talk about the Hilltop. And much like the Murphy on Saturday, always an interesting scenario. Oh, actually, I take that back. I've got stuff. I've got two races out of order. The moving backwards, I got more than that race out of order. I've got a couple of them out of the order. The Miss Preakness comes ahead of the very one.
Yeah, and you know, this is about Happy Soul cutting back. I don't blame them for having tried her going long. It obviously failed. She was never going to have an opportunity to win that race without the lead. So the fact that it played out the way it did was really just, you know, it was never going to give her much of an opportunity. I'll tell you who I thought might be a little bit interesting off the layoff. She may end up needing a race. I hope she's a little bit bigger price in her morning line with Saucy Lady T. It's also going to depend on how the racetrack is playing, too. I mean, she's a one-run closing type, but she actually picked up some grade one black type last year for Jimmy Chapman and now was privately purchased and in the care of Graham Motion. Just not a horse that you would expect with Graham Motion, right? The guy that primarily focuses on routing types. See what maybe she can offer at the sprint distance, but as long as Happy Soul speed is not totally dulled, I think she'll be a pretty tough customer here. Her sprint races are just, they seem like they're superior to most of her rivals.
I thought that La Casa d'Oro deserved a look in here. Now with Brittany Russell and off the maiden win at Laurel in April. Nothing wrong with her credentials for Stuart Grant.
No, I agree. And of course, Brittany Russell is a trainer who, if you're not familiar with the Maryland circuit, she wins like crazy. And getting this horse off of Christoph Clement for the Elkstone Group, obviously, I would say moved her forward pretty substantially in her first try at Laurel. And still has plenty of upside. This is only her second start off a layoff. So, yeah, I think there's real reason to believe. And if you can, you could see a horse that still is lightly raced, takes that kind of step forward in their three, you know, second start as a three-year-old, first opportunity for a new barn. It's a positive sign.
Let's now talk about the Hilltop. It goes as the ninth, and this starts the late pick five. The last race, by the way, There's the pick five that ends. This is the pick five that ends with the Black Eyed Susan. Here's the 1 mile turf race. Its counterpart is the Murphy on Saturday. And Pizza Bianca is 4-5 on the line here. And okay, she's the filly to beat and all, even off the disappointment in the Memories of Silver. But I didn't think she had to win.
No, she doesn't. And I'll tell you what, Steve, I don't think she ran very well last time. And I honestly don't know how good she is. Now, she's probably better than these horses, and she's probably going to win. Isn't it also a pretty negative sign that Kristoff is sending her to this race when the Wonder again is in a couple of weeks on Belmont week? And so I wonder if Kristoff might be a little skeptical of her distance capabilities. And I wonder if he thinks that Belmont Oaks ultimately might be a little bit too far. And so he's going to go the more conservative Lake George, Lake Placid type route as we get towards Saratoga. That's going to limit her opportunities for a grade one for a bit, but, you know, no big deal. It's better to know your horse, especially early on in the campaign. She had an unbelievably good trip in the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, we all saw it with that jockey cam that Jose Ortiz wore, and we saw him weaving in and out of traffic like somebody on a mission in, you know, 4 o'clock rush hour. And it was an incredible ride. So she rated to be a horse that would be overrated, pun intended, when she finally came back. And I think that's what played out in the Memories of Silver. I think she ran fine, you know, but she didn't run well by any chance. She was beaten by a horse that she, at least as a two-year-old, looked like she was quite a bit better than. So there's pace in here. The other Kristoff should set things up. Diamond Hands, who looks like she's at her most comfortable on the lead. I thought Vergara ran really well as a two-year-old a couple of times, and now comes back with the advantage of getting LASIK. So I wonder if she might take a bit of a step forward, second off the layoff for Graham Motion. This feels like a weekend he has really circled with a lot of live opportunities, including Crystal Cliffs on Saturday in the Gallarette, and Graham Motion, of course, riding the high of winning the Man of War last week. I don't know, maybe Vergara could be a bit of a price that you could use as a backup or as an alternative to Pizza Bianca, who I think it's a little imprudent to just concede this race to her.
That's the way I felt, too. And it should be noted, I mean, in terms of not running in a few weeks in New York, Dave Grenick wrote yesterday or the day before that they're looking at this as another audition with thoughts of going to Ascot, Bobby Flay. Yeah, so Ascot is got everybody's vision clouded. I'm going to give you a horse, speaking of Brittany Russell. Murph is really interesting to me in here, Nick. That was a really good and a significant step forward that puts this Malibu Moon filly and Maryland bred right on a par. This is, you know, this is Candyland and the Ponds family that bred, and it was $140,000 Timonium purchase. I know Murph got beat and ended up fourth in that allowance, but it was being asked to do a lot of things for the first time, moved to the grass and stretched out. I thought Murph had a bit of a intrigue and is going to be 10, 11, 12 to 1.
Yeah, it looks like she was a little early last time on top of the pace, yeah, that ultimately came apart a bit. So, no, I think those are the kind of horses that you can upgrade, and she's going to be a good price as well. I have no argument there at all.
The first stake on the day, and the first of all stake, Rainbow Six on Friday. And this one, speaking of clouded judgment, it'll be very tough for me not to be rooting for and on Exotic West, but there's plenty of reasons to like her. She has gotten really good for Gary and for Louis Lazanero, and I think she'll have every chance, and I think she's the filly to beat in here in the Allaire DuPont.
I totally agree, and you know, this is not me being a homer and rooting for, you know, for House Connections, but yeah, she makes a ton of sense. She's developed nicely. She's gotten more tactical speed, which is always useful. And, you know, this feels like a race that'll have a decent pace, but I think she'll have an opportunity to stalk and pounce ultimately. And Javier seems like a really good fit. This is kind of his kind of filly, the one that he can put, you know, a length or two off the lead and kind of judge the pace as he's really exceptional at doing still. And, yeah, I agree. I was looking through it, and I thought, yeah, I got to find a horse here that I can give Steve a hard time about, you know, about preferring to Exotic West, and I just didn't find one. So I'm very excited to see her step her game up and see if she can take down a little bit more Black Tide.
That'd be big. And it's a good, you know, it's funny. It's just a six-pack, but it's actually, it's a nice group. There's that Frostpoint of Mott's and Godolphin that was third in the top flight. Norm Cassie shows up in town, and you would think that, you know, there's opportunities at Churchill for a two-turn filly. And she's coming out of a nice try in the Double Dog Dare to Malafat and Bonnie South. So Super Quick, who was made the favorite, the thing that Super Quick's going to have to deal with, she's got Little King's Princess next to her for John Ortiz, and she's going to get hounded. And then you look at, we'll see about the scratches, if Click to Confirm is running today or tomorrow. But right. if Click to Confirm is involved, there's more pace. So I thought that the four and the five, you know, they're gonna be sparring, which should be to the advantage of Javier and Exotic West.
Felt the same way to me, exactly. And Super Quick's a filly who I would have liked if she had a little bit more of an opportunity to get a free run on the front end. But as you said, Little King's Princess should really keep her honest. And that's Little King's Princess kind of a linchpin in the race, because if she shows the speed she normally does and puts Super Quick on the chase, then things get quicker, and that really sets up well for Exotic West and the late-moving horses that that'll really prefer for things to develop in front of them.
I'll give everybody a couple of quick notes before I write the races up later today. In the seventh race, it's a second-level allowance going a mile and 16th on the turf, Healing for Mike Maker, you know, clearly the horse to beat with Gaffalione. Forrest Boyce is getting on John G., the five-year-old, for Tim Keefe. And if John G. comes back running, I thought that at 12-1, he was absolutely worth at least using underneath, if not potentially as a win candidate. That's in the allowance. The sixth race is a three-quarter filly and mare first-level allowance. You got a heavy Brittany Russell favorite in another woman, the two, with Heavy on Toledo. Blinkers come off. Trombetta takes over with Belladoro, who's 12-1 and could be a little bit of an exotic booster. I thought Damon De Ludovico was very live with Awfully Foxy, the 5-1. When you look at the fifth race, turf sprint, Coop Tries Harder for me with Fergal Lynch for Jane Sabelli. And I really didn't have even an alternative to Coop Tries Harder, the 8 at 4-1. Interesting fourth race, three-year-old exclusive, first-level allowance going a mile and a 16th. Affable Monarch is first Lasix for George Duarte, 4-1. That's the 7. There's a 20-1 shot in here for John Saltzman Jr., Gallon Gold. I don't think you're going to get 20-1, but you might get 10. The 5-horse I thought was super live. So there's a few ideas going into the early part of the Black-Eyed Susan card. Nick Tamaro, thanks so much for this.
You bet, my friend. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
You got it tomorrow. Nick Tamaro, folks, will do the Preakness card with him on Friday. And maybe he looked at some other things. We'll see. I know that certainly the Twin Spires boys, they'll have looked at the Louisville, which I told you earlier today was came up really good. Tony Black is going to join us next. And here's Tony telling me, don't worry if you don't get to me. That Tony, we're getting to you, and it's gonna be right now. We can't. It's Thursday before Preakness, and Tony Black spent a good portion of his career, even though he's synonymous with parks and Philadelphia Park and Keystone, and Atlantic City, and everywhere else that he rode. He spent plenty of time here, so we're gonna talk to Tony. He's gonna explain to you again about you know, the banking here, and he's going to tell you about seeing Ron Turcotte's tush in 1973. Exactly 49 years ago today, Secretariat. In addition, while we wait for Tony, interestingly, the 19th is a date on the calendar that there's been probably the least amount of Preaknesses run on 19ths. Only 9. The first one in 1951 when Bold won it, 56, Fabius. 62, the fabulous Greek Money Rydan by a nose separating. Then it took 11 years, Secretariat. You also had Spectacular Bid win on this date in 79. Gate Dancer, the other Jack Van Berg winner with Ali Sheba. It's also the anniversary of Neil Howard and Summer Squall winning for Dogwood and denying Unbridled a dual classic status. One of my favorite days here, Point Givens Preakness in 2001. And 2012, you had I'll Have Another become a dual classic winner. And that was the end of the line. About 20 minutes, a little, just a tick under. And do we have Tony Case? No? Not yet? I thought I can hear. No? Tony? I guess not. All right. I'll wait. I'm a little surprised by that. Because he just texted me, Case. 2 seconds ago. When I look and see the text, it didn't necessarily, right just then. You know what I can do, though, while we wait for Tony, is let me check the
Steve
scratches. There's Tony Black. There we go.
How you doing, Steve? You said it when you just exactly right when you said I saw a big red horse's butt and Ron Turcotte's butt in front of me, and Pinkay's horse and butt in front of me. The closest I got to them in the 73 Preakness was in the start gate, because I was just two horse, and Sham was one, and Secretary was three, I believe. And I, you know what? I left the gate straight, outbroke Secretariat. By the time we went around the first turn, Secretariat went into a big, long gallop and blowed by all of us. I said, man, he's moving. I was thinking, Turcotte, you're moving early. You're moving early. The pressure must be getting to you. No, I don't think so. He just galloped. I was going to give Turcotte some advice, Ronnie, after, but then when the horse won, why would I give him advice? The horse won, you know? But he broke kind of like, I don't know, he never broke. He was a big horse, and I guess he had a little trouble getting that first jump out of there. By the time we went around the turn, I think we headed down just off the elbow to backside, and he was just galloping past us.
Beautiful. One of the most
beautiful horses I've ever been around or had the pleasure of being next to, and it had to be some honor to ride a horse as beautiful as Secretariat.
Well, here's the interesting notes. Deadly Dream stumbled, then was brushed by Sham just after the break, and was outrun thereafter.
Yeah, I should have sent him. I didn't. You know, when you're a young rider, you say, it's going to be hard to beat these horses. I'm going to sit there and make one run. You don't make one run with those kind of horses. You know what you do? You let your horse roll leaving the gate. But he stumbled a little bit leaving there and lost momentum, got back up. Should have sent him. But you'd get terribly criticized if you get off there and you send one. So, you know, but it's that picture that I think I sent you, it's such a great memory. Because I remember coming down the stretch, and I think Torsion finished. What did he finish? Fourth in the race.
Torsion, no, he's behind you. No, he was sixth.
I did beat. Oh, I beat Torsion. What was I, fifth?
You were fifth. Torsion was sixth. It was Secretariat, Sham, Our Native, Ecoletage, Deadly Dream, and Torsion.
Ecoletage. That's what it was. Ecoletage. I come down the stretch trying to beat Ecoletage. I think that was Cusimano.
It was Cusimano. It was George Cusimano.
And he beat me like, it wasn't a big head or a nose or something. But, you know, you wanted to finish as close as you could. Just like in the 81 Derby for Vernon Winchell. Come down the stretch, and I'm strapping. I thought I finished fifth. They hung the numbers up, and Classic Go-Go was fourth. And Vernon Winchell was ecstatic. He had a horse, Classic Go-Go, had many other horses that I rode for him. And he said, my biggest dream in life, no longer with us, but Ron Winchell kept the same colors in the stable going, his son. He said, is to win a Derby, Preakness, or a Belmont, a Triple Crown race. He said, it would be the best dream come true I ever could live. So I root for for Ron Winchell, and I root for Epic Center.
Nice.
And I thought to myself, you're going to win it, Ron. You're going to win it. Oh, my God. And then here comes Rich Strike down the fence beating him. And I said, you just broke my heart and Vernon's heart. But I'll never forget when after the race, Vernon come to me. He said, what do you need for coming here today? I says, it's an honor to be here, Mr. Winchell. You know, no, I don't need nothing. I'll never forget, he sent a check to the jocks room about a week later, and he paid for tickets and everything, and, you know, admission and all, everything I needed, he paid for, license. And he sent me a check for $1,581, plus he had paid for the tickets. And I thought, I told him I didn't need anything, but he sent a check, and it had a question mark next to the $1,500. Was that enough? And I thought, man, what a class act.
That really is.
Class act. I've had a few owners like that really treat me like a superstar, even though I was just a bread and butter rider. But he was such a nice man, and I root for him. And I think I hope Ron's not listening. I think I got them colors at my mother's house. If I have to sell them, I gotta look. I love them colors. And they were beautiful colors, and I don't think they were the colors, the modern day colors. They were the old nylon silk colors, not the, what do they call those colors now, the ones that are body
the speed
colors,
silks body. Speed silks,
yeah it was just a regular set of colors, and I'm gonna have to look for them because I'm gonna hang them up someplace in my house if I have them, and I'll send him the $50 for them.
That is funny. I can tell you who is listening is DJ Fisk. So the Winchell organization is aware that you're holding a set of Winchell silks. And I did look up just now on the inflation calculator. That $1,500 today would be a check for $4,770. So that was a very nice thing. Everybody raved. That's why they call them the Donut King.
Yeah, and Winchell Donuts, and they had some. I used to go to, there was one in by Arlington Park, and I would go in there every morning and leave the girl a big tip because I thought, I'm leaving some of this $1,500 for his employees, Winchell Donuts.
Look at you. You're unbelievable.
I think it was Arlington Park. It was Winchell Donuts. I believe it was, but it was some track I was riding at. And I whenever I saw Winchell, the name Winchell, it just kind of brought tears to my eyes because I said,
nice.
It's just an honor to be here, Vernon. You don't have to send me nothing. And he sent a check with a question mark, like, was it enough? And I thought, what
Tony,
a class act.
Yeah. Who was this horse? This horse won a race at Penn National and then went to the Preakness. Who is this Deadly Dream?
And I won some other, I think, a Buzz Worcester. Deadly Dream was the Preakness. Vernon Winchell's horse was Classic Go-Go.
Right.
Yeah,
but I'm talking
Green
Preakness.
Was the Preakness for Woodchester, Buzz Woodchester, and he won some races. He was a Maryland based horse. Buzz was a Maryland based trainer. Woodchester, Worcester, or Chester. I forget his spelling, but they were good to me, those people, and I rode the horse. And I'll never forget, on Friday night, they said, "Come on, Black, you're going to the Preakness party at Pimlico with us." I said, "I gotta get to bed early, huh? Big day tomorrow. Ride some other horses." "No, you're going to the Preakness party." And I'm so glad I went, because that's memories, you know?
Yeah.
That's memories that you can't reproduce that time set or those memories. If you pass by them then, you never get a chance to relive them. And I'm so glad that they said, "No, you're going to the Preakness, to the Preakness party." It was a nice time in racing. I really enjoyed Maryland. I rode with guys, never forget, Hardtack, Macaulay, Feliciano, guys like that were riding down there. Luigi Gino, Danny Wright. Oh, let me name some of the heavy heads. And, we'd go out and eat. We'd go to the Suburban House, Hardtack, Bacali, and me. Or we'd go get crabs at least once a week. And it was just such a great atmosphere, and there was such camaraderie in the jocks room. You know, Eric Walsh, what a good rider he was for Leatherberry. You know, Jesus Guadalupe, guys like that. They were good riders, and they raced in Maryland, and Hardtack was near the end of his career, but let me tell you something. He'd come down the stretch, and his ass would be bouncing off the horse's kidneys, and it would. And, you know, I used to say, "Man, you get off of these horses, Bill, their kidneys must be sore when you get done with your ass bouncing off them." He'd say, "Yeah, that makes them run faster, Black. Don't worry what I did. I win 5 of these races." he was a tough-ass guy to be around. Bill Passmore, another class rider down there. You know, Chris McCarron was coming. I'll never forget, Chris and Greg McCarron was an older rider at the time. Chris had just rode his first race, I think, at Bowie. And, of course, they looked at Bill Passmore as a, you know, a guy that they would try to emulate or ask questions to. And Chris, nobody has to say what he went on and did in his career when he left Marlin. But it was just a great place to ride. I was glad I stayed there a couple years. The only thing that happened that was negative there, and it wasn't that negative because I got two beautiful sons out of 40 and 38, was I got married and brought my fiance home to Pennsylvania in 74, and we got divorced. We didn't get married for a few years, and then we got divorced after we got married. I says, man, why'd we ruin a perfectly good relationship by getting married? We were together eight years we were together, Steve. We got married, and I think we didn't even last four. And we had a farm. So I thought, why did I screw this relationship up by getting married? But I got two beautiful sons, Tony and Mike, and they are beautiful. They are both successful, and I was so fortunate that they were raised by me, my mom, and their mom. We all worked hard, and they're good kids, Tony and Mike. It was just a good experience. I got married once after that, too, but that didn't end up too good either. And that girl was named Carol Lynn, the same name as the first one, Carol Lynn. Now, how's that for coincidence?
Well, you didn't have to. You didn't have to. That's one of the oldest jokes, right? With Johnny Carson. He married two named Joanne, so they didn't have to change the monogram on the towels.
The towels. Kept the same towels. Carol Lynn, and their birthdays were both in February.
Well, that means you were attracted to a certain exact type. Exactly,
they had to be long, tall, and pretty. And I didn't pick them on personality; I picked them on looks. So that's the lesson I learned. Personality didn't play into it.
Well, Tony, with all due respect, anyone you came across was going to be tall. Let's be honest.
Yeah, for it. You know, I went to the doctor's today, and I got on the scale. He says, what do you weigh? I said, 110. He says, really? And then he says, how tall are you? And he put me on the scale and the thing. I says, 4'10". I used to be 4'11 and a half till I broke my back. He says, what? I says, yeah, I broke my T5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. I don't even have a T7. He says, yeah, you're 4'10". I said, well, let me explain something to you. I lived on a scale. I know my weight. I know exactly what I weigh. I know exactly how tall I am. You know, I can tell you my boot size. And the doctor looked at me because we're sick in this house. My son, my youngest son, he stayed out of school till today from last week. My little girl's still home from school. They all got tested COVID and flu. They don't have anything. She's going to be home till next week. And I got whatever they gave me. I said to my little boy, I says, hey, Pete, thanks a lot, buddy. He says, I don't blame it on me. He says, Maddie gave it to you. I says, well, you gave it to Maddie, and now Maddie gave it to me.
I got a missive here for you. Chuck Balthazar says Carol was too pretty for you. Chuck says...
Chuck, you're right about that. I forgot. And you know what? I'm so glad his name comes up, you know, on occasion. And he was another quality rider down there. What a tough guy, class rider, strong rider. I even used one of his sticks a couple times when I dropped mine because he had the same valet, David Bishak, and I had David Bishak, the valet, Chuck Balthazar. But what a class act he was. He might have gone eating some crabs with us. And when we used to go to these places and eat, it turned into a heaving contest. you talk about riders having to maintain weight. Well, Bracali, he was another big rider down there. Bracali was he was just an absolute heaver. And I lived with him for almost a year, 8 months down there until he got married and then he threw me out. But we used to go eat, and Jimbo, I was 110 pounds, and Jimbo had me heaving to keep weight because he was cooking, and we were going out and eating, and I figured, well, I can eat and keep up with him if I learn how to heave. So I heaved for about 4 or 5 years until I wound up with a duodenal and peptic ulcer.
Yeah, it's no good. Guess. No good.
Yeah,
no
I passed out. I passed out, fell on the floor. My first wife, Carol, called the ambulance. They took me to the hospital. They said, you're bleeding, and we got to go do something to you. You got a duodenal and peptic ulcer. Then I quit heaving.
Yeah, it's terrible what it does to your body. It's just a
bulimia.
Just awful.
Bulimia yeah. is something that is a reality at that time set, you know, that time period. Probably is less now, but it is a reality in racing, heaving, you know, when it came to some of these riders. And some of them were very much controlled, like Mike McCarthy. He was very controlled, you know, maybe once a day. But there was riders that ate in between every race, ate and heaved. They'd get on the scale, they would be 117. They'd go heave, they'd be 110. You know, it takes a lot of room in your belly to hold 7-8 pounds.
Tony, we're gonna get tight for time, so I got to ask you real quick. I don't know if you heard me when I gave the dissertation about the degree, you know, the banking degree here at Pimlico.
Yeah.
Explain to everybody, it's not so much that it's the turns aren't tight. The problem is there's no banking.
It's a flat turn. Roy Smith, a really well respected track superintendent, he's at Indiana Grand. Racetrack and casino, but he was at Philadelphia Park for many years. He said, the turns are the same circumference tone. He says, why the inside stays good or the track stays even is because there's no bank to the turns. Same circumference as any track that size.
Same as Churchill, basically.
Bank. Yeah, and what you have trouble doing is a horse that comes from way off it running on a flat turn. The horses that already have momentum going into the turn will maintain their momentum. The horses that have to build momentum are going to really work hard on a flat turn to build momentum. But the turns are the same circumference. They're just flat, and sometimes it favors speed. The inside is good because it's an even, you know, there's no bank, and the crown of the track doesn't really affect the way they maintain it. Now, you go to parks and some of these tracks, the inside will be dead as a doornail only because the dirt works its way down to the rail. Pimlico.
Exactly.
You know, Pimlico, no, you can run around the turn, but you're not going to get any help with the bank. If you ever watch race cars, you know, go around the turn, they can't go 100 around the turn unless the turn's at a tremendous bank.
Well,
that's how they do it. Well, horses need the same degree of banking, and it's only a couple degrees. I forget what Roy told me, the amount of degrees, but it's like no banking and Parks is like three times the amount. I forget what it is, 3.5. I don't want to say a number because I forgot what Roy told me, but he gave me the degree of banking.
The number that sticks in my head, and I haven't looked at it for years. The number typically is about 14%, and here it's 7 or 8%.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's like near nothing compared to other racetracks. You know, generally speaking, other racetracks have a real good bank and horses can pick up momentum. And you know, the other thing, when you're coming off the turn, if you're clear, you can go round the turn, pick up momentum, and off of the elbow of the turn, sweep them down in there and let them run downhill for a stride or two off of the turn because it's banked. And you pick up momentum up the stretch too. But when there's no bank to the turn, you're running around the flat turn, it's hard to pick up momentum. The horses that already have momentum, they'll maintain it, because you won't be able to pick up momentum. So it kind of looks like, oh, it favors speed. Maybe they're having trouble getting around the turn, but they're already in front of you, and they don't have to pick up momentum. They can just try to maintain what momentum they have. So it's an interesting track.
Tony, I guess you're picking Epicenter for Saturday?
Yeah, Epicenter, and you know what? Secret Oath is going to be one of the horses to beat. I only rode the Black Eyed Susan one time. It was a four-horse field, and it was the most trouble I had ever been in any race that I rode. Four-horse field.
Amazing.
I can't think of the name of the horse. I got a picture of my mother's on the horses, but I'll go look at it. But, yeah, Epicenter and Secret Oath, I think, will be, you know, my picks. Epicenter, I'm picking it with my heart, not my head. But he deserves to be picked. And I'd love to see Ron win the Preakness. I'd love to see it, and I'm rooting for him. I hope that doesn't stop him. I won't bet on you, Ron Winchell, but I'll root for you. Because if I bet $2, I'll stop you.
Tony Black, everybody. Tony, that was fabulous. Thanks so much. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk next week.
Hey, take care, Steven. Keep up the good work. I love you, brother. Be looking forward to watching the race and talking to you next week. Bye now.
You got it. Love you, too. Tony Black, everybody. Amazing. And you got a firsthand description of Secretariat. on this date in 1973. I'll put up plenty of pictures and stuff this afternoon. Looking forward to the get-together later this afternoon, too, at Country Life Farm, the Pons family having a Preakness party. And looking forward, not only that, looking forward to seeing seeing the yearling, who I have not seen since last year. So our Motown Colt, Landauer is his name. This was fun. What a day. My God, they went by in a hurry. And we never saw Aaron. But thanks to Dick Powell, Alan Foreman for the great hour, Nick Tamaro and Tony. Good luck today, everybody. Back with you tomorrow. Black Eyed Susan Day. And we will handicap from top to bottom the Preakness card with all the regulars and more. Good luck. Talk to you in the morning.
How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Horsemen, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade II Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Elks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at